Welcome in Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge alongside Inside Carolina's Ross Martin. Good to see you, Ross. It's been like 2 months since the last Tar Heel Talk. What have you been doing?
It's been a while. You know, covering a lot of basketball, navigating life, you know, getting through January, and February is now here, and February is actually almost over. We're heading to March. Exciting times. March 1st is Thursday night here. Yeah, and exciting times to be covering the Tar Heels as they have that 6-game winning streak. Unfortunate loss last night to Miami on senior night, but it's a really fun time to be covering a team like UNC, knowing you're going to the to Brooklyn for the tournament, and then of course the postseason looming ahead.
Yeah, well, so we'll see where Carolina ends up going as part of the NCAA tournament. Certainly at the beginning of the year, that Charlotte destination was out there as a goal. We can talk a little more about if there's any possibility left of Carolina getting there. But let's look back over the last few weeks, because there was that 3-game losing streak. Then come back and you get the win against Pittsburgh to kind of get back on the right track, which Pitt is awful this year. Theo.
How about Theo's comment last night? He was like, Cam Johnson, I can see why you transferred from Pitt. And that was hilarious. It. He was just roasting people left and right. No one was safe.
We'll get into a little more of that Theo Joel senior night stuff that was going on here as we get into this a little bit. But the game against Pittsburgh where they get back on track, and then you beat Duke, you go to State, get the victory over State, and beat Notre Dame in that 3-game in 5-day stretch that everybody was looking to there, and end up going and getting a good win at Louisville, get a good win on the road at Syracuse. I think I'm missing one in there. No, that's it. And then Miami coming in on senior night and a get down huge 16 points
in the second half.
In the second half, come back, and Joel Berry is willing them, it seems like, to a victory there. But a last second shot ends up knocking the Tar Heels off. So over the last few weeks, what have you taken away from seeing Carolina go through some really low lows and then come back and play some really good basketball?
Yeah, so those 6 wins and the loss to Miami all were in February. So it's 7 games in February. So the end of January, they had the Virginia Tech loss where they looked defeated, didn't show much effort, got the game taken to them by the Hokies up there in Blacksburg. They had that really tough game against NC State where they looked good at times. Al Freeman from State shot lights out. UNC took it to overtime where they just ran out of gas and lost. That was a good, I thought UNC looked pretty good in that State game, and State just shot out of their mind. But that was an L, and a tough L there. And then the Clemson game, I was at that game down there in Little John, and they just got beat really bad in the first half.
Theo's out in the first 90 seconds.
Yeah, and then they came back and showed a lot of fight. I think Cam Johnson had a huge game shot, and Joel Berry played pretty well as well.
That was the first game of the Jahlik Felton suspension as well. You remember him?
Yeah, Jahlik Felton. I don't think we'll be seeing him anymore, which is crazy. That's a topic for another day. Yeah, but that Clemson game was kind of a weird transformation because it was a bad loss, and they looked defeated. They looked beat down, but they showed some fight at the end. And it was a 4-point game, 82-78. And the locker room, you had this dichotomy of Joel Berry really getting on his teammates and saying they had to bring more. You had some players upbeat, some were defeated. And Theo was in there saying, man, I was super proud of how they fought. And that was kind of the turning point heading into an easy win over Pittsburgh. And then the Duke game, which is obviously, to recount that, was a great moment for UNC and transforming the season almost there. And they just rode that momentum and figuring out an offense, figuring out how to use a small lineup with Cam Johnson and Kenny Williams hitting shots consistently. Yeah. We've kind of seen that since then. And then Joel Berry really taking over and playing his way into first team All-SEC consideration. Luke being consistent, and I think Theo Pence is the one player who took his game to another level in terms of being a playmaker, rebounding, defending at that 4 spot, 3 spot, and even some guards as well. And his play combined with everyone else stepping up their game a little bit and knocking down 3-point shots has been what has helped UNC get the win over NC State when Luke went off, and then 2 good road wins, Louisville, Syracuse. They handily beat Notre Dame, leading us to Tuesday night where they got down to Miami, showed fight. Joel Berry put the whole team on his back, and they eventually fell on that last second shot. I mean, what are you supposed to do on that? I mean, that was a tough shot. He was about 10 feet from the 3-point line, lofted it out. Looks like he traveled a little bit. And kind of crushing the dreams on senior night, but didn't feel that bad.
No, I mean, they recovered very quickly, and, the speeches afterward were not quite as dejected as you might think after that type of game. But a couple of things you talked about there that I thought were really important were Cam Johnson, number one, feels like the team is used to playing with Cam now. You know, he had the injuries at the beginning of the year where he was out for a while, and it's hard to insert yourself into a lineup in general. We've seen that even with Theo being out last year and Joel being out this year whenever you've been around the team, but he's coming in cold to a new team entirely. So he's playing a lot better. Everybody's playing together with him as well.
Yeah, and I think you saw Cam Johnson kind of trying to figure out his role early on. That Virginia game, he looked really bad. I remember I was with my colleague Greg Barnes, and he said, man, Cam Johnson is just – he just doesn't fit right now. He's not doing the things he needs to do. And then, you know, 3-4 weeks later, he's slashing the basket. He's using his length to get into the lane and maneuver for easy layups. He's able to knock down threes. And I think he has really found his role along with his teammates trusting him and figuring out a way to get him involved. And then he's able to lead the break, knock down transition threes. And his development's been huge. And then Kenny Williams kind of getting out of that slump, which is big. He had that big 6-3 game. He had 6 threes. Yeah.
Against Duke.
Yeah. He's still kind of been up and down, but definitely playing better than he was during that losing streak. And that's been huge because UNC, they don't shoot many free throws. They don't shoot too many shots down low in terms of post scoring. So they have to hit some threes. You saw it last night. They needed those threes from Joel Berry to get back in the game. And Cam Johnson's kind of development and figuring things out has been huge. Interesting to see what he does next year, not to get too far ahead.
Yeah.
There was an idea that this was going to be it for him. One season, kind of, he's already had his degree from Pitt, kind of leave the program and start a professional career. Who knows what happens there? He may want to come back and have another run with Luke and Kenny, who I know he's pretty close with. But they figured out in offense what they need to do, and that's been the key in this stretch.
Yeah, and another development on the offensive side is Joel Berry finishing at the rim. He was going through some stretches this year where it was very unlike Joel Berry because we're used to seeing him get to the rim, finish strong, get fouled, knock the free throws down, and move on. But he was really struggling with that earlier this year. That has developed. The one thing that we haven't seen consistently is defense. There's been stretches where they play good defense for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and that seemed to be enough so far this year. But 91 points to Miami. I mean, that's a lot of points. And, Miami even – or Carolina left a lot of points in that game at the free throw line and just missing some layups there as well. But they're going to have to play better defense if they're going to end up advancing.
Yeah, and it's hard to conceptualize defense and kind of hard to talk about it because you look at the game and it's all about scoring. And it's premier defense that has improved, but obviously it's still not there. They're giving up big numbers and giving up big shots and kind of easier shots around the hoop where it seems like they do take some plays off or certain players take plays off. And they know what they need to do. It's not like a very young team that has to just kind of learn this defense. They kind of know what they need to do, and they've proven they can hold some teams to low scoring. Notre Dame game, 66. And anyway, UNC is so good offensively, and there's so many possessions. The opponent's scoring numbers are going to be up, but there are times they have to lock down. Back to Joel Berry, I mean, that's a great point about him being able to score on the basket. We wrote about that statistically and looked at kind of how it's improved. I don't know what it is, but he is just – getting more on his shot around the basket and taking it through contact, and that aggressiveness has paid off because he has become an elite weapon in getting into the lane, and even despite his height, being able to score at the rim consistently adding on to his three-point shooting, which has really jumped in recent weeks. UNC was 13 for 20 from the free throw line, 65%. Berry missed 3 free throws. May missed 1. Johnson missed 2, and Manley missed 1.
Because 65 is almost exactly what Miami shoots on the season from the free throw line, and yet I think they missed
1.
Like 10 of 11 or something like that. Yeah, right.
12 of 13 overall, and 10 for 10 in the second half.
Yeah, that Newton who ended up hitting the shot, the game-winning shot, is like a 60-something percent free throw shooter, and he hit 4 or 6 in a row down the stretch there as well for them. But for this first senior night, to hear those speeches from Joel and Theo, Roy also getting out there, and Roy was not there for the fan yelling that they need to beat Duke. He was not wanting any part of
that
conversation.
He kind of went off on that
guy. He did. He
took about a minute or two and kind of kept going back to it. It's just a classic Roy moment. Unreal. Exactly what happened.
Yeah, so Roy's giving his speech about, we're not done yet. Somebody shouts, let's beat Duke or something like that. And he says, I don't care about that. and then says, we want to beat every freaking body.
Yeah.
He let out a couple of curse words under his breath there as well. If you go back and listen to the piped audio from the microphone, you can hear a couple of curse words there from Roy under his breath. And then he said, you think I don't want to beat their ass?
Yeah.
Yelling at the guy. So it was a fun little moment.
It's classic Roy. And how do you think that fan feels?
Yeah.
Like,
you gotta leave.
15,000 people there and Roy's yelling at you.
At you.
It's bizarre.
And everybody that's sitting around you knows it was you that yelled.
And Roy's just yelling to him.
And Roy is yelling just back in the direction. But I imagine everybody just turning and looking at the guy.
He's like sweating.
You got to sit down or just leave, one or the other. But what was it like to see Joel and Theo giving those speeches? And how does it compare with, I mean, it seems like we have this every year at Carolina with with Isaiah Hicks, Kennedy Meeks last year.
And Britt.
Nate Britt as well. Yeah, a very emotional speech there. And then Marcus and Bryce, of course, was a big one as well. Marcus and Bryce kind of feels like this Joel, Theo emotion of a night.
Yeah, I mean, this is a special, special class, senior class. And I know we're going to get into this more in a little bit. But the big thing is how Joel Berry and Theo Pinson committed to UNC along with Justin Jackson during kind of underneath that UNC NCAA cloud where there was questions and a lot of negative recruiting going on. But being there in the Dean Dome last night, you didn't know what to expect because there was a press conference on Monday when we got to talk to Joel Berry and Theo Pinson for 22 minutes. And they both said they weren't going to cry or they might have cried. And it seemed like they weren't going to talk that long. But both of them took the mic and talked for a very long time, 9-10 minutes
nine,
each?
9-10 minutes, yeah. And I think Theo was 9.5 and Joel was a little more than 10.
Yeah, and Joel Berry's, he's such a serious guy. He's heartfelt, kind of says what he thinks. He gave advice to all the kids out there. He obviously thanked everybody. And he's kind of had that underdog mentality. You know, he wasn't a star his freshman year. He struggled getting through all that and then just told people, like, not to give up and never let anybody tell you can't do anything and those kind of moments. But I thought Theo Pinson's was kind of the star. He was so funny. He got really emotional, kind of letting his heart out, thanking Roy and thanking the fans and what UNC basketball means to him, and then just going off and roasting people left and right. I mean, the guy is a stand-up comedian. He's cheesy, but he's funny. He's quick-witted with jabs during the press conference and jabs with the mic, you know, calling Coach Steve Robinson his second father because he's bald like his dad, roasting Pitt basketball, taking shots at Kenny Williams and teammates and all that stuff. And it was like for 4 or 5 minutes there, it was like a stand-up routine. And then you had the heartfelt showing gratitude for Roy Williams, those kind of stuff. It was really special. And it's a special thing UNC does with these senior speeches, just allowing them to kind of talk and give thanks and recount their career. And it's something UNC does really well and just letting them talk.
He gave that line to his dad saying, I told you last year I just wanted to make you proud, and I hope I've done that. I'd take a minute there.
Yeah, that was another one. I mean, it was a very emotional scene. And he also said, like, my dad travels all the games. My teammates always joke around. And he said he's surprised he still has a job. I think his dad's a UPS driver, actually. Learned that last night.
But, you know, he's a North Carolina guy. He's from Greensboro, so it always is a little bit special to have those North Carolina guys talk about what it means to be able to wear that jersey. So
yeah.
It was a cool experience on against Miami after that game, even though it was a loss. But we want to talk a little more about this class. Justin Jackson included, of course, there. He's already been honored this year, and his jersey going up for his accolades throughout his career at Carolina. But we'll talk a little more about the impact that this class had on the program. Whenever we come back, Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill. He's Ross Martin from Inside Carolina. I'm Blake Hodge. Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill, Blake Hodge alongside Inside Carolina's Ross Martin. Carolina coming off of a tough loss on senior night against Miami. 91 points Hurricanes put up in Chapel Hill. Still got the one game left against Duke, of course, to close out the regular season, and then the ACC tournament again in Brooklyn this year, all leading up to the big dance here in just a couple of weeks. We talked at the end of the last segment about senior night with Joel and Theo and clearly what it means to them to play for Carolina and what it means to Roy Williams to have been able to coach them. But whenever you're looking at this class overall, of course, you have to also include Justin Jackson, Those guys came in at a time when the NCAA scandal was really just kicking back off. There's a lot of negative recruiting going on. And in the couple of classes that were after them, you saw a pretty decent drop off in the type of player that Carolina was able to go after. But those three were all McDonald's All-Americans. Justin Jackson was a top 10 player in the country. They all came in and were here for 3 years in Jackson's case, but Joel and Theo finish it out in 4 years and go to two Final Fours so far, two national championship games so far, and win one national championship. Now with the class that Carolina's got coming in next year, it's getting back to that kind of all-star caliber player, all-American player. So what, whenever we're looking back in a couple of years, Ross, what do you think this class is going to mean in terms of legacy at Carolina?
Yeah, and thanks for having me on, Blake. As we look at this class, I may not be a big numbers guy or a big defense guy. I don't like talking about boring things like that. But I really do like investigating it and diving deep into UNC's recruiting classes, because recruiting is so important in basketball, because one class can kind of change a team. And it's interesting to see how things evolve and develop. You know, UNC was recruiting at a really high level early on in Roy Williams' career, landing that class with Tyler Hansbrough, Danny Green, Marcus Skinner, Bobby Frazier, then getting Ty Lawson, Wayne Ellington, Brandon Wright, those guys, and getting John Henson in, and all those players. And it's kind of interesting to see who they go after, who they land, the point guards, the big men, all that stuff. And really, this 2014 class with Justin Jackson, Theo Pinson, Joel Berry was your classic UNC class, all close to being five stars, all McDonald's All-Americans. Jackson was number 9 overall. Theo Pinson was number 15 overall. And Joel Berry was number 30 overall. And like you said, they came in during this cloud. They trusted Roy. Roy trusted them, and they committed. And really, that class combined with what Marcus Page and Bryce Johnson did, and I don't want to throw any shade at what Isaiah Hicks, Kenny Meeks, Nate Britt did, because they were critical as well. That really bridged the gap from a time when UNC was not landing big-time players. Luke May, Kenny Williams, they're great guys, great players, but they just weren't highly ranked. This class that came in this year, Andrew Platek, Sterling Manley, Jaleek Felton, those type players, Garrison Brooks, there was not really an elite talent on that class except for maybe Jaleek Felton. So they've been Justin Jackson, Pinson, Berry have been a part of so many wins, and you look at what they did last year, the Final Four, National Championship the year before. Justin Jackson was a huge player and starter on that team. Yeah. They've been starters for multiple years. And the way that Pinson and Berry have carried themselves as Tar Heels during their 4 years has been huge. And they'll go down as one of the most important classes and just two of the most important players during an odd time in UNC basketball recruiting, staying with UNC, staying for 4 years, and just winning and doing it the right way and being great leaders. Justin Jackson left a year early, rightfully so, and Berry and Pinson to be able to carry the flag for the Heels and be a part of some really special times. And if they go to Final Four this year, it'd be unreal to have three Final Fours during this time when recruiting was down. And it's not out of the realm of possibility, and it'll just further cement those two players their legacy as Tar Heels. Berry's jersey already going up. Pinson will be remembered for a lot of things, most likely the playmaker and kind of the goofy, fun-loving leader. And then, of course, Jackson's jersey will be up. It's up. ACC Player of the Year.
Right, he was ACC Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And you're looking at Theo. The possibility exists that Theo could still get up there if he – it would have to be something with an NCAA tournament run.
And he's not the type of player that you usually see up there, because Green's not up there.
Green, right.
Marcus Skinner's not up there. Henson's not up there.
I don't know about John. I don't know about Henson.
He's not up.
I would want to double check. Henson was such an unbelievable talent. It's one of those that I just assume is up there, but he may not actually be up there. Yeah, and Kendall, I'm not sure, would be up there. I mean, he left after his sophomore year, and he was hurt during all that stretch. So look at whether his jersey goes up there or not. People are going to remember Theo Pinson, and you may end up going back in a few years and being kind of the old head in the room who's talking about, oh, Theo Pinson, you missed getting to see that guy play on a regular basis, because I think he's going to have that type of the impact on the memory of Carolina fans in a way that Marcus and Bryce did. This Joel and Theo grouping is just like the perfect odd couple that's mashed together. And also, you know, Carolina fans have got to think about how lucky they've been over the last, was that 6 years, to have Marcus and Bryce, and then even with Isaiah and Kennedy in there as a little bit of a transition, to immediately go back with Joel and Theo. It's going to be really weird to see a Carolina team next year, and I know, again, we're talking about something that's a long way off, without either of those guys as part of the team.
And it's those players you named were big-time recruits, and yeah, they were really good players for 4 years, you know. Paige started as a freshman. Justin Jackson started as a freshman, and Joel Berry started as a sophomore. Those were really good players for 2, 3, 4 years, consistent, double-digit scorers, leaders, you know, all ACC contention. And not every team has that type of player stay for 4 years, and that's what's really important. If Theo Pinson or Joel Berry leaves early, they're kind of just another blip on the radar. But the fact is they had 4 years, and they play at a high level. I mean, what Theo Pinson's done this year in terms of just ramping up his play, becoming the best playmaker in for UNC and maybe in the ACC in terms of the number of assists he has from his forward position, and just being able to find teammates, and then just do the little things in terms of rebounding, of guarding 6'10", 7-foot players through his career, being a physical, tough guy. And then Joel Berry just put the team on his back as the most valuable player of the Final Four last year, having some huge games this year, knocking down clutch shots, and just being an example that players can turn to. I think that's what separates UNC from other teams. You have these four-year players who kind of set the tone, know what really expects, and the freshman sophomore is able to see that and just kind of fall in line. That's kind of what I think teams like Duke often struggle with, is they don't have someone to look to that understands what's expected in practice, in conditioning, in post-game and pre-game. And when you have leaders like Theo Pinson, Jackson, Berry, Marcus Page, Bryce Johnson during their time here, you see how things are supposed to be done. It's easy to kind of follow that and understand the expectations.
Yeah, and so Kenny and Luke and Cam as part of next year's senior grouping, assuming everybody is back and moving forward from there. But it's certainly a special group whenever you're talking about Joel and Theo. But you really have to include Jackson in here because, you know, he ended up going after his junior year. He's a first-round draft pick. He was the ACC Player of the Year on a national championship team. Wouldn't have made any sense for him to come back. Joel dipped, I don't even know if you'd say he dipped a toe in the water. He declared for the draft for about 36 hours and then came back immediately and withdrew that paperwork and everything. Theo didn't go through the process. It's important to remember that Theo's been hurt for decent chunks of his Carolina career as well. So I'm curious to see moving forward if any of those are able to play at any type of level.
Both of them are fringe NBA players. They'll make a G League roster. I guess they could be drafted. I think they could be second round picks.
I think it would be a stretch to see either of them drafted. I think they both end up on
the
rosters in the G League, which
competing,
you know,
for time. I mean,
Isaiah
Hicks wasn't drafted. Meeks wasn't drafted. Marcus Page was taken 55 overall. Yeah. Nate Britt wasn't drafted.
But all those guys are getting paid to play basketball, right?
Yeah, I mean, a European, they could be elite European players in China doing what, you know, Ty Lawson and Tyler Hansen are doing now. And I think it's super special to mention, like you said, the injury. Theo Pinson struggled with injuries throughout his career. He started every game and played in every game this year. And that's just special to think about him really becoming healthy and then everything working out and clicking, knock on wood, to put together a really special senior year that he can go back and remember on and people will remember him. Because if he was injured again, it'd be kind of a wash on his career because you never got to see it come to fruition. And I think we definitely have seen the true Theo Pinson. And a lot of times that isn't the case. You have people transfer, you have injuries, you have players, a lot of what-ifs involving certain players. But I think we did see the true Theo Pinson, saw him come full circle and show what he could do as a basketball player.
We got a lot more to talk about. Game against Duke coming up on Saturday. Whether Duke or Carolina's got a better chance at advancing further into the NCAA tournament, maybe get into a little bit of that. Tar Heel Talk here on 97.9 The Hill. Welcome back, Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 The Hill. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin. from inside Carolina. And Ross, the game coming up on Saturday. Are you going to Cameron?
Yeah, I'll be there. I won't have a seat, but I'll be in the room. Yeah, they didn't give me a seat, but I will be in the media room or somehow lingering around there.
Okay.
It's just it's a great environment to be in. So
you'll
be
in the building somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where I'll be, but I'm going to try to watch it.
That's a good strategy. So what are you looking for in this Duke game? There's two things that stood out to me over the past few weeks, and it's been the issues that they seem, I say they, that Duke reporters and people that follow the Blue Devils a little more closely seem to be pointing out with the way that their defense has been improving.
Yeah.
And it improved at a time when Marvin Bagley III was out for a stretch, and now he is back. I don't think there's any doubt they're a better team with Marvin Bagley, but is it a different Duke team than we saw earlier this year in Chapel Hill?
Yeah, for sure. I think they're playing a lot better together. I think Grayson Allen getting more time at point guard has really improved how they operate offensively. It seems to have opened things up for Grayson Allen as well. He's been a more prolific scorer at that spot. It's crazy because they won a bunch of games without Bagley, and he comes back and they lose to Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Dockich called him out. I didn't really hear that, but he called him out.
Yeah,
did you hear that?
Dockich was talking about the
ESPN's Dan Dockich.
Yeah, ESPN's Dan Dockich. He was talking about Bagley. He said, you can just see it in the way that he's playing. He's all about himself.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting.
I didn't hear that live, and I didn't really watch. I only watched the last part of that game. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to obviously want to win. I mean, call me crazy, but Duke's don't want to win that game. They're playing at home. It's a tough environment. If you haven't been there, it's unreal how loud and how close the fans are. It's a lot of pressure. But if you're going to trust a UNC team,
yeah.
Joel Berry, Theo Pinson have been there, played in there. Luke May started there last year.
Yeah. Isaiah was out.
Kenny Williams has played there here and there. So you have some valuable veteran experience. Joel Berry and Theo Pinson don't really get too rattled. There's always that quiet confidence and control they have. I think this loss to Miami is really going to want them to close the regular season on a winning note, almost like a second senior night for Joel Berry and Theo Pinson. Because if they beat Duke at Duke, given how high Duke's ranked and the caliber of player they have, it's almost like everything's forgiven from that Miami loss. You kind of close the year with a great memory for fans and the players. And you're just playing at a high level. I mean, something didn't click last night or on Tuesday night against Miami. The intensity wasn't there, and there will be no lack of intensity because every possession is so important against Duke. It's so weird how valuable every possession is and the intensity put on each play, each move, each pass, each shot. And you'll sense that, and I think UNC will step up their level of play if combined that with how they've been playing in terms of shooting, rebounding defense, and the level of play that Theo Pinson, Joel Berry, and Luke May, Kenny Williams, Cameron Johnson are playing it right now. I think it'll be a truly good game that UNC has a great chance to win. I'm interested to see the spread.
Yeah.
I think Duke will be favored, but it should be 1-2 points.
Well, I was shocked that Carolina was favored in Chapel Hill when it first came out. And then
swung the other way.
And then it came back to Chapel Hill by the end of that. And, you know, they ended up winning by, I think, what the projected first line was. But Roy talked about this during the post-game speeches for senior night, that he felt like he put maybe too much pressure on those guys to not ruin it or spoil it for Joel and Theo on their senior night. So I'm curious to see how they take that type of mentality on the road to try to close out the regular season. Grayson Allen, senior night in Durham as well.
Yeah, and I think one other thing to pay attention to is how they guard Bagley, given how well they kind of limited his touches at home in the win. Theo Pinson was on Bagley and really did really well in just limiting the way he got the ball and how he got the ball.
He also got injured in the first half. He played the whole game, but they keep pointing back to the first half of that Carolina game was when he picked up that knee sprain.
I didn't see how he played against Virginia Tech, but obviously it's a little different coming back from injury and just getting adjusted to the speed of the game. But, Duke's freshman did look a little rattled when UNC went on that big run to come back. They were down 12 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
UNC was down 12 and came back. So I think getting the first win just gives you confidence knowing you can compete and beat and play against Duke. And I think that was the fear for many heading into the game, that they would be too intimidated given just the talent and athleticism that Duke has.
And that was when Carolina was in that middle of that three-game losing streak, at, you know, and or had just beaten Pittsburgh, which wasn't really giving you a ton of confidence to build off of.
So it should be a good one. It'll be a great one. And then we head into to Brooklyn, where UNC is still trying to get that double bye. If they win.
If they win, they're the two seed.
Regardless.
No matter what.
Yeah. And then there's State, Clemson, Miami, and Duke all competing for those two, three, and four seeds, which would give them a double bye first game on Thursday. So a lot has to happen. A UNC win obviously would secure the two seed and would drop Duke down. And then you have State competing for things. It's a very complicated thing.
Everything else depends on how everybody else plays. The only thing that you can control, you know, if Carolina would have beat Miami, that would have guaranteed a double bye. They wouldn't have been able to finish worse than fourth. But if they beat Duke, they finish second in the conference. They go in as the two seed. And I think it'll be really interesting to watch them move forward through the conference tournament. Notre Dame is getting Bonzi Colson back as you're heading into the ACC tournament as well. I think that's going to be something to consider to see if they can get on a roll and maybe work their way into the NCAA tournament as well. Looking at the ACC tournament and then trying to project to the NCAA tournament, based off of what you've seen from this Carolina team, the people on the roster now, and this Duke team, if you had to go one or the other, who goes further and what's the furthest that either of them can go?
Gosh.
How about that?
That's a great question because I think they kind of are both at the same level. You have an experienced Duke team with a senior leader.
I think they have a lower floor and a higher ceiling.
Yeah, because but they could start clicking. They have clicked at the close of the ACC season, overlooking that Virginia Tech loss. Yeah. I think they're still a good team. If things start clicking, they get some good matchups. They could play really well, and you know, Kay's one of the best to coach in the NCAA tournament. Other than those couple losses they have against the likes of Mercer,
Lehigh,
and of course South Carolina last year. But I mean, it's just different in the tournament. You know, players come to play and they could get it rolling, which gives me which I think Duke could be a Final Four team easy, especially if they just if things start clicking like they have. I think UNC has a lower ceiling. I always put it, kind of set it at the second weekend Elite Eight, I think, is the is what fans should expect. And if anything is less than that, then it's kind of disappointed. If you get past the Elite Eight, obviously that's, I mean, you're playing with house money there. And you should be super excited about getting to the Elite Eight. And then and anything after that is would be incredible for UNC. You have to knock down shots. You have to defend the three. And that's what's come down to. Teams that shoot really well against UNC have beaten them when they make, you know, 40-50% of their threes.
March Madness is a special time for college basketball fans everywhere, but I think specifically for North Carolina fans, and I'm expanding that beyond UNC fans to fans of college basketball in North Carolina. We've all got, if we grew up anywhere around here, you've all got some crazy stories about the ACC tournament or NCAA tournament and how that aligned with you and your childhood and going to school and everything like that. We'll talk about some of those whenever we come back to wrap up Tar Heel Talk 97.9 The Hill. It's NCAA tournament time coming up. Of course, the Duke game on Saturday, then the ACC tournament, the NCAA tournament. This is why March is wonderful, especially here around North Carolina. You're from North Carolina, right? You're
from Greensboro, tournament town.
Tournament town, yeah.
And it was, you know, the ACC tournament was always held in Greensboro.
Always. I still feel like that's where it should be at all times. I'm from Burlington, so we're both, you know, kind of close together there. My birthday is also right in the middle of all this nonsense every year. Whenever I was growing up, I would get pulled. My dad would come and pick me up at noon, before the noon Friday game that started the ACC tournament every year. And I don't know on a scale of one to insane where exactly that falls, but I feel like it's very North Carolina.
Yeah, and isn't it crazy that the first games were on a Friday? Wasn't there a play-in game on Thursday?
Well, there's eventually, nine teams. Whenever there were nine teams. Yeah, yeah. So the play-in game was Friday, I think.
And no, then, Thursday.
And then they eventually had moved back to
quarterfinals
Thursday.
Friday. They had to have quarterfinals Friday. With eight teams, and they had four teams on Saturday, and the championship was on Sunday.
Okay, yeah.
But the playing game, they had that 9-8 game was on Thursday. But yeah, isn't it crazy now that the first games are on Tuesday?
It ended on Saturday now? Like this.
Yeah, I like that. It's a prime time. And it gives you another day. It's a bigger profile game. And the Sunday, the slop Sunday after church game.
Yeah, but that's what I know. That's
yeah,
what I'm used
it feels like.
I don't want to watch it. I don't want it to be at 8:30. I know it makes me sound old, but
still
I
in
don't
your 20s.
Want to start.
Yeah, what I remember is you get this, it's a spring feeling. You have this certain crisp in the air. It's like the smell of spring. You have some crocuses coming out of the ground. You have daffodils blooming. The dogwoods are blooming. It's just turning spring. It's early March. And it's not too hot. It's not too cold.
You can finally get out and start shooting basketball.
Exactly. And there's still some leaves on the ground, old wet leaves. And it's a clear blue skies in North Carolina. And my parents weren't huge ACC people. My dad went to Georgia Tech, but he was in the marching band and he was a drum major, so kind of a nerd. My mom was a big hippie, so they didn't take me out of class. Academics were very important in my family. But I remember if you had a teacher who went to UNC or went to State or Wake, they'd wheel that big television into the classroom for that Friday afternoon game. It was Friday. It was after lunch. And if your team was playing, Georgia Tech, Wake, UNC, State, Duke, you'd sit there and watch.
I mean, you know how many times I watched Clemson and Virginia play on a Friday afternoon?
And you'd wear your team colors, and there's that feeling, that buzz was around it. And you still get that. It's just not as special with the with the 16 teams now. Yeah. So
Watching Syracuse Boston College play on a Wednesday afternoon doesn't quite get me juice.
Exactly. But it's still cool. That weather's still there. Every game is important. It's just fun. It's competitive. And we'll be heading to Brooklyn Tuesday for the ACC tournament. UNC likely to play either Wednesday or Thursday. If they win, they'll play Thursday. And it's just a special time to be. And it's kind of like all eyes are on NCAA basketball right now. Yeah, the ACC tournament kind of kicks it off. You'll have the national media paying a little more attention to it. And then it's just March time. And then you don't know where you're going. You're traveling. You know, I've been covering UNC for a couple of years now. And you've been to Philly. You've been to Greenville, Raleigh, and then, of course, Houston and Phoenix, Memphis. It's just exciting time because every possession, every shot, every stop is so important in each game. And you can get that second round game, the round 32, that's super pressurized. And it's just a fun time.
Just convince myself that Carolina's going to lose to Arkansas or Oklahoma or whoever that it's a Power Five team typically, but they're not great. You're just convincing yourself that they're going
to
lose that
game. Yeah, and what I remember, I used to be a teacher, and I took the Thursday and Friday off. I wasn't covering UNC, and I had an excuse. Like, I got my license renewed. I got my Tennessee license. I was living in Nashville, and I just took that Thursday and Friday off, set up two TVs, had the channels. That's when they moved to TBS and Turner, so you had TNT. TBS, CBS, and that slot channel.
True TV.
Yeah. So I had the things listed, had the channels. I'd be going back and forth. And that's the best. That Thursday and Friday, you lay on the couch and you find the game that's closest. You find the one with 2 minutes left and it's a tie ball game. And that's what you live for. That Thursday and Friday are awesome with the upsets left and right. You got Greg Gumbel. You've got Clark Kellogg.
Everybody's just yelling.
And it's unreal. And you're spanning to the fan bases and the different coaches dancing and celebrating in the locker room, the water showers. And of course, Saturday and Sunday are exciting too. And then Sweet 16, and it's just bigger games and the upsets. Yeah, that one team or there's two teams that make it to Sweet 16.
How the hell is George Mason still
in? San Antonio Roadrunners are in the Sweet 16. The coach becomes like the star, and you have that star player, the four-year senior with the beard who suddenly made it.
From a few years ago.
Exactly. I know a lot of people plan their bachelor parties around that this weekend, the first weekend in March. And covering the game is fun because you're kind of on – it's not vacation because you're working a lot. You're working into the night, but you're with your buddies. If you have friends and media, you're in a hotel room, and it's fun to kind of go to the different social events associated with the tournament, and you kind of see a different side of people because they're away from their families and kids and stuff. And
it's always fun to see which national media writer Roy's going to piss off as well, or he's going to piss Roy off.
Yeah, and you see different national media guys big time in you come shake their hand like, hey, I'm Ross, I cover UNC, I'm a beat writer, and they could care less who you are, and all you're doing is trying to just talk some hoops and and network a little bit. So it's a fun time, and it's exciting because you don't know where you're going to go.
Good luck to everybody and making it through this next stretch of a few weeks, because is certainly going to be a lot of fun. Carolina at Duke on Saturday night. Make sure you're tuned in here to 97.9 The Hill for complete coverage of that. And as we get into the ACC tournament, don't forget that 97.9 The Hill will broadcast every game of the ACC tournament starting in the quarterfinals, whether Carolina is playing or not. We'll broadcast all those games here on 97.9 Hill. This is Tar Heel Talk. Ross Martin from Inside Carolina. I'm Blake Hodge.